taking place. And in the afternoon, we should see more general sunny spells poking through the cloud sheet, and that will help the temperatures along to around 19 to 21 Celsius in the warmest of spots. For Northern Ireland, a grey start to the morning as well. Could be a few brighter spells, particularly towards County Down, but maybe a few spots of rain arriving in the west towards the evening time on a freshening breeze. Temperatures here around 16 to 18 degrees. In Scotland, well, a bright start to the day across eastern areas, otherwise a rather cloudy start to the day. Most places stay dry throughout, although there will be some brighter or sunny spells developing through the rest of the afternoon. The best of these across central and eastern areas, where temperatures will reach as high as between 18 and 20 Celsius. That's the latest weather. Luke.
Chris, thank you. Now on Radio 4, Chipo Chung continues her reading of The Cooked Seed. An Chi Minh has written to her friend Joan Chen for advice on how to become an American student, only to discover that she'll need to prove she can speak fluent English.
I bought a book titled English, 900 Sentences, determined to teach myself. After lesson 10, I was stuck, unable to figure out the grammar. When I told my father about my correspondence with Joan Chen, he told me I was crazy. It's a false hope you're building. You'll only end up crushing yourself. I'll continue kicking until my last breath, I replied. Joan put me in touch with a friend who understood the admission process of an American art school. I'd need a portfolio. Wondering what was expected, I decided to check out a new Western art exhibition in Shanghai. When I got there, I was confused and thrilled at the same time. Confused that Western society had abandoned Michelangelo for childlike paintings. Thrilled that so-called modern art would be easy for me to copy. I learned the names of Picasso, Matisse, and Andy Warhol. I stared at the paintings and wasn't sure if I liked them. The strokes were clumsy and the subjects unrecognizable. The only thought that excited me was, if Americans preferred childlike paintings like these, I stood a chance to fool them. At home, I set out canvases, brushes, and colored inks. I painted through the night. I felt like a child who'd been given a magical brush. I painted trees and bushes in abstract shapes. I painted my deepest fears in the form of dark and broken strokes mixed with tear-like ink drops. I splashed my emotions on the canvases. My mother said she saw madness and death in my paintings. 3 months later, I received an acceptance letter from the School of the Art Institute of Chicago. Joan had warned me this was only the first of many steps. Next, I had to obtain a passport from the security authority in Shanghai. And after that, I had to apply for a visa at the U.S. consulate. At the office of the Communist Party boss, the former veteran didn't look me in the eye when he asked me to explain the difference between America and Albania. The question confused me. Afraid of giving the wrong answer, I took out the acceptance letter and pushed it toward him. He pushed it back. What's the difference between America and Albania? I wondered what kind of trick he was playing. Terrified of giving the wrong answer, I said, "Please enlighten me, for I'm illiterate over international affairs." "We know that there are proletarians in Albania, yes?"
"Yes."
"Are there proletarians in America, Comrade Min?" Relieved, I gave a firm answer.
"Yes, of course. There are hundreds and thousands and perhaps millions of proletarians in America."
His eyes brightened. "Excellent. We know what to do now. Are you, Comrade Min, a member of the Youth League of China?"
"Yes."
"Do you intend to promote revolution in America?"
"Of course."
The boss was satisfied. "I shall stamp your application."
I ran from the office like a criminal who'd escaped by accident, afraid that he might change his mind. I was surprised he hadn't mentioned that I was Madame Mao's trash. I wondered if he'd actually checked my dossier. It was discouraging just to look at the long line wrapped round the block at the United States Consulate in Shanghai. Since Deng Xiaoping had opened China's doors, the people's view of America had changed dramatically. As we watched newsreels showing America's poor protesting on their streets, we were shocked to see that many of them were obese. They dressed better than the rich people in China. For half a century, we'd been fed the idea that they were skeleton thin and wore rags. The newly imported American movies, Snow White and The Sound of Music, fueled our wonder. I was beginning to understand that Americans weren't the devils we'd believed them to be. More and more university graduates wanted to go to America to see for themselves. I carried English, 900 sentences, wherever I went, but I was making virtually no progress. To prepare to face an American visa officer, I drafted a self-introduction in Chinese and had it translated into English. I'd been told that if you failed to impress, you'd be given a rejection stamp on your passport. When people heard that I didn't speak any English, they said, "Have you eaten a lion's gut? How dare you plan to fool the consul? They trained lie detectors. They're bound to see through you." I thought it would be suicidal if I told the truth. "Hello, I'd like to go to America because I want to escape my misery in China." My mother hadn't raised me to be a liar. She'd threatened to disown me. But what would happen if I gave up? I'd end up living the life she led. That would be worse than getting caught lying. But what if the consul asked a question? I wouldn't be able to understand him and wouldn't know how to respond. I decided I'd recite my self-introduction so fast that it would be difficult for him to interrupt me. Never in my life had I been as terrified as I was the day I left for the U.S. consulate. The government's rule had forced me to resign from my job before I applied for a passport. My father was receiving chemotherapy for stomach cancer. He was crushed to learn I was jobless. He was sure I'd ruined my life. I wanted to cry when I looked at his ghostly face. The last thing I wanted was to become a burden to my family. The thought of suicide entered my mind again. I found I wasn't afraid. Death would be an escape. The image of the American consul standing behind the window was rather blurred. He paid no attention to the papers I pushed through the bottom of the window slot. He stared at me in silence. I knew my cue had arrived. "You can do it, Anchi. Jump off the cliff. Now!" My drill kicked in. The flow of English syllables poured out of my mouth like a waterfall. The consul continued to stare at me. My mouth opened and closed on its own. I had no idea where I was in my speech. The consul's expression turned soft. He held up a finger as if to ask me a question. "Stop him from interrupting!" My tongue rolled faster. I was running out of air in my lungs. Then I heard, "Okay!" I wondered if I was hallucinating. The consul spoke again, but I couldn't understand a word he said. With a pencil in one hand, he flipped through my papers, then nodded. "Next!" Had I been rejected? I heard my name called by a female at the next window. I came face to face with a Chinese secretary, who sneered. "You think you fooled the consul? You're just lucky. They like people with crazy determination." "What does that mean? Visa or no visa?" "Visa!" she yelled, and turned her head away in disgust. At Shanghai Airport, I tried not to think about how long it would be before I could see my family again. I worried about my mother's health and my father's recovery from cancer. The sound of the airplane taking off remains a permanent memory. The noise was deafening, but it was music to my ears. I'd been waiting almost an hour in the small brown room at Seattle Airport when the translator appeared again. "We've decided to let you go." "Do you mean I'm not going to be deported?" She smiled. No deportation, Miss Min. Congratulations. She'd found a clause in my papers that said my school was going to place me in an intensive language program at the University of Illinois. I had 6 months to bring my English up to an acceptable level. The downside was that the program cost $500. I already felt the weight of my debt to the aunt in Singapore who was sponsoring me, and I bitterly regretted having to borrow more. I was given a tour of the school and the city of Chicago. I tried to read the street signs, but all I could hear was the soundtrack of a Chinese opera as I bent my head back to admire the Sears Tower. The dorm was way too luxurious for me. I'd have preferred to live on the streets. The bathroom had hot water available 24 hours a day. I felt like a princess because for the first time in my life, I'd get to sleep on a mattress. I didn't need a mattress. I'd be fine sleeping on concrete. How could I afford to pay for all this? I heard laughter, followed by the sound of a key turning. The door opened, and a dark-skinned person entered. An African freedom fighter, I thought. She looked exactly like the girl I grew up seeing on a communist propaganda poster calling for the proletarians of the world to unite. She enthralled me. She was a breathing sculpture with chocolate-colored skin and large, fig-shaped eyes. I didn't expect her to treat me like an old friend, which made me feel wonderful and grateful. I'm Takesha. I'm 18 and I'm from Mississippi. All I could do was smile. I see. You have trouble with English? No problem. Where are you from? Motherland is China, I managed. China? How wonderful. Takesha wanted to know how I'd enjoyed America so far. I wished I could have told her how much I enjoyed the big moving room, the elevator. I loved the American city nights with the streets and buildings all ablaze, though I couldn't imagine the cost of electricity. Most of all, I enjoyed Takesha, the way she accepted me without reservation. The next day, I went downtown to look for a job waitressing or dishwashing. Walking between the fantastic tall buildings, I didn't feel real. It reminded me how far I'd come and that my feet were truly on American soil. At the first two restaurants, I was waved away. The begging part was the most difficult. I told myself I must learn to get used to it. The students in my English class came from all over the world. I didn't want to be too hard on my teacher, but I did want to get my money's worth. I was unsatisfied by the speed of the teaching. The teacher didn't press for results and allowed the class to run at its own pace. I seemed to be the only one that drilled at the grammar. My next-door neighbor at the dorm was Kate. She looked like a cover girl out of a fashion magazine, but her manner was trusting and childlike. It was as if she'd never suffered any hardship in her life. She loved to say, "Let's hang out, Aunt Chi." My dictionary showed me the meaning of hang and out, but not hang out. I asked Kate to explain. Like Takesha, she wasn't bothered that I was a language cripple. She didn't mind repeating until I got the meaning. I noticed she never said, "How do you do?" Instead, she and her friends greeted each other with, "What's up, dude?" I couldn't find this in English 900 sentences, but I changed my greeting to, "What's up, dude?" I asked, "What are you supposed to do when you goof around?" She laughed. "Nothing." Solemnly, I took notes.
Chipo Chung has been reading The Cooked Seed by Aunt Chi Min. The programme was abridged and produced by Jane Marshall Productions for BBC Radio 4, where we're standing by for the shipping forecast.